It's the Shipping Container, throttling with you on a Thursday. Wait, what's throttling?
Is that thrusting. Throttling's fine. Throttling's fine. That works. With that game, Izzy, there's no rules. It's just right.
That's me, Izzy Gutierrez, by the way. I'm in the Shipping Container today.
Yeah.
What's going on, guys?
What up? You look like you're just enjoying a nice breakfast. Tony's got a good vibe today. Roy's holding it down in the studio. Billy will be here in a second. It's good vibes on this Thursday. I feel like it's going to be a good local hour, Izzy.
I know you hate, you're going to hate when I tell you this, but I've been to the gym already this morning and awesome. I got home and I'm like, sorry, Anthony, we'll get
No, hold on. I got to stop you right there. This quarantine has not been great for me. Okay. I've been having a lot of stress. I've been having a lot of doing things that I probably shouldn't have been doing. The gym hasn't been open. I haven't had the want to go out and run and exercise. And then you tell me that you wake up early in the morning, you go out, you've already banged out your workout, you're sweating, you're still burning calories, you're eating waffles. Like, I don't want to hear it, Izzy. I don't. I really don't. Sorry.
To be honest, like, it's not really even my fault. It's Anthony is working a lot. And so we got to go in the mornings if we're not going to go at all, right? And so it's his call. We go in the mornings. I'm done. Feels good. I'm still sweating, though, which is I have a towel here.
And you're also still chewing.
I am, yeah. I hope it sounds good. I wanted to give an audio representation of what's happening this morning.
That's true.
Because right before we started, I was finishing, now I'm finished, with my waffle. And I told Chris, because I know Chris likes to, he gets a little excited when people are preparing food in the mornings while we do radio. I don't really get that, but.
There was one bit. I cooked breakfast, okay? It's not my thing, Izzy.
No, it was. And then like later, I think you've asked your dad a couple of times, like, hey, what do you got there?
It's my default when I'm like, just like when I don't really have much. I'm like, what do you have for breakfast? That's like my default.
Right. And so I've got this, like, I don't know if it's because I've been feeling good about my workouts lately, but I've been a little sloppy in the mornings and baking a lot of waffles because I found this really good waffle recipe. But it's really supposed to be for like Belgian waffles. You guys know the difference between Belgian and regular waffles?
I know that they look different on the menu. Like there's one that say Belgian waffles and then there's one that say waffles.
Roy?
It's square and thicker than a normal waffle, which is like round and thinner.
Here comes Tony now, knowing the exact difference between a waffle and a Belgian waffle. Go ahead, Tony.
If Billy were here, he'd say one of them is from Belgium, by the way.
I don't know the difference.
Okay. I mean, it's basically what Roy said. It's the pockets are deeper, right? So you get more like surface area on the waffle. And so it's like crunchy, you know, you got to love that about the waffle. And you still get like the good, you know, fluffy inside. I don't have a Belgian waffle maker. I have a regular waffle maker. And so the pockets aren't the same, but this recipe is still good. Still comes out crispy and really, really good.
I have to say real fast, it's kind of annoying to me as your friend that you've already worked out and made yourself homemade waffles before 9 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah. Like, no, it really is. It really is.
It makes me infuriate. You're much more motivated than I am. You're
so much more.
You have your shit together. Like, what a
much more.
What a productive morning. I have not made homemade waffles in like 7 years, and I haven't worked out in like 7 months. And you've done
both. Does it help if I had the waffle batter left over from yesterday? Like, I didn't actually have to whip up a new batch.
Actually, yes.
That
makes me feel a little better. A little better.
Just makes me think you prepared, knowing that tomorrow, you know what? I may want some waffles, so I may not throw this one out. And I'm going to kill a workout in the morning, and I'm definitely going to have those waffles. It was premeditated, Izzy. I can see from a mile away.
You know what my big thing was that proves that I have my belief together? I ordered takeout last night, and I didn't eat all of it. And now I have a little packaged lunch of it today, a little leftover. My big thing that shows that I'm a productive human in society.
Not bad. You had to hold back on, but you could have eaten it all last night if you wanted to, right?
Yes.
What was it?
Japan Inn, not healthy. Like just
okay.
Fried rice.
I've been to that Japan Inn one time, and that was before like I really experienced hibachi very, very often, and that was pretty solid. Like I can't, I gotta give it its credit.
Oh, I love Japan Inn. Like, it's the best. Billy is here now. Billy, Japan Inn, hibachi, tell the people that it's amazing.
What is?
we don't have that down here.
You guys don't have hibachi in Miami?
No, we do, but it's just not called Japan Inn. So, caping up for Billy here, you would have asked him a question he would have had no idea about because we don't have that brand down here in Miami.
Japan Inn.
Yeah, we have Samurai down here. We have Benihana down here. Samurai is probably the best. And they have the new one, Aoki in Dayland. I'm not too sold on it, Billy. I don't know if you've been there or not. Different kind of stuff.
I thought that they had the same ownership.
Izzy?
Do you remember it, babe? That one in Dayland? Was it any good? Yeah, it was just kind of big and fancy. It was all right, you know.
It's the people, it's Steve Aoki. It's Steve Aoki and basically has a teppanyaki restaurant, and it's like, bah, not
good.
Didn't
his brother, was it his brother? His brother's a big,
I think it might be his dad. His dad, I know, started Benihana. Yes. Like the original Benihana, like his dad started, and then he branched off. He started doing music, and then I guess got back in the family business, put his name on it. And I think it's over a little overpriced, a little overrated.
Wow.
Sorry. Agreed. I'm sorry.
So I want to get into the biking with Izzy. He texted me yesterday about it. He says he has thoughts on that. But before we do that, Jimmy Butler in this hotel room. All right. I have a theory on this. Now, I know we're a Heat, like this is technically a Miami local hour. We're Heat fans around here. So I don't want to be the show that's kind of being a little skeptical of Jimmy Butler. But like we already know that he's the guy that likes to let people know he's working out at 3 a.m. and stuff like that. So like with that mindset, I feel like Jimmy Butler, there's a chance if we're being very cynical about this. And for the people that don't know, Jimmy Butler was in the bubble. He got reports that he was dribbling a basketball late at night. So security had to go up there, knock on the door, and he opened the door, apparently was like in a full practice outfit and was having a practice in his hotel room. And that's the big report from the bubble. What do you got, Billy?
I have a question. Izzy, you are connected in the basketball circles. And Stu guys just assumed you were going to be in the bubble for some reason. Like, get Izzy. He's in the bubble. I'm like, I don't think he's in the bubble, Stu guys.
Well, I don't want to get to that. I don't want to really get into that. I don't want to get upset at higher ups and whatnot. So continue, William.
All right. So anyways, what I was going to ask is these hotels are exclusive to the NBA, correct? Like there's no tourists that are staying in these hotels. There's no tourists that can infiltrate this bubble, right? So correct. The only people that would be in rooms anywhere near him would be other players, coaches, media members, or executives of some type. So if presumably. He was making noise, then he was a victim of the snitch line, you would think, right? Like someone called the snitch line and complained, hey, there's a lot of noise coming from next door and it's Jimmy Butler dribbling his basketball.
I mean, it was either the snitch line or just the operator and say, hey, the room above me is making a lot of noise. So in a sense, there was a snitch, yes.
Well, here's the thing. Hmm. We know that Jimmy Butler's in whatever room he's in, right? I mean, we don't know what room he's in, but Jimmy Butler and his teammates and whoever know what room Jimmy Butler's in, right? So if you dribble a basketball, you have to think the only people that can hear you dribbling the basketball is the room to the left, the room to the right, or the room below you, because the room above you probably won't hear it. But either way, there could only be four suspects of who snitched on Jimmy Butler. So why is no one, all these journalists that are in there that don't really have anything to invest, why is no one investigating who's in these rooms around Jimmy Butler and we can out the snitch right now?
Well, let me tell you, in terms of like where you're allowed to go in this bubble, which I have information on despite not being in it, had I been in the bubble, I would have been a tier one person. And again, before I do anything, say anything to get myself in trouble, I don't know yet. I don't know yet. Maybe, whatever.
How many tiers are there?
I don't know. I know of three. But
and
I know
one good or bad.
Yes. One is well. It depends. I mean, it depends on what you're thinking about, right? It's one if you want to be close to the players is the better one. But could you be also closer to Corona if you're one? Yeah, maybe. And so the reporters who would have been on the floor would have to be in tier one. So if you want to get, you know, somebody to hop into those areas where they're, you know, the players are allowed, yes, the sideline reporter or anybody who's in tier one, send them that way. You can't ask people in tier two. All right. Tier two people just do video conference interviews, nothing face to face.
So back to Jimmy Butler, before we try to dissect Billy's question of like who's snitching, because I think that's an interesting angle, too. We need to get to the bottom of this. My money's on Chris Paul. But before that, do you guys think that, like, what was Jimmy Butler's mindset on this? Because to me, there's only like two or three options here. Either he was just in his room doing that move, Izzy, I know you've done it, with the basketball. He just is sitting on his bed with his legs, like, out on the floor, and he's just dribbling back and forth. Tony, you know this move too, like, with a basketball, like that move when he's just bored in a hotel room, dribbling under his legs. Do you guys understand the move I'm talking about? Everyone's giving me blank stasis, or did I just freeze? I think that's what it is.
So yeah. I'm wondering, you know, what. what exactly is the sound of a basketball, right, on the floor? Like, what does that sound like? It's... Or it can go a little bit faster, right? Or sometimes a little bit slower. Did anybody search the room to see if there was another human being in the room and it wasn't a basketball? That's what I'm saying right now. Because if this guy's really practicing and doing this at 3 a.m, whatever time it is, when he's got all these other things accessible to him, and as Chris tried to say before he got frozen, he knows exactly who's around him and who's going to get caught and who's going to be annoyed by this. So was he really banging a basketball or something else?
There's no way he was legitimately getting a real workout in. Either he was just dribbling just for his own amusement, or he literally told a security guard, hey, I want this news to get out about me. Can you come up around this time and just, you know, put the word out that I was being disruptive? There's no way he was legitimately improving his skills in his room. And like, that's the point I want to make here, right? Do we agree with that? Or does anyone think that he was genuinely like working on his post-up moves in his hotel room?
So you think he did this just for attention?
I think it was one of two things. It was him trying to like, how can I get the narrative of me working out like in the wee hours? How can I get that out in the bubble? Or I'm just like dribbling between my legs and I happen to be disrupting people. Like, there's no way it was like a legitimate workout.
So I have a couple questions. One, to get to the bottom of this. Obviously, we know how tall Jimmy Butler is, right? 6'7", 6'8". Really big guy. What I want to know is, one, how big in square footage is the room? Is it a double bed situation? Is it a single bed situation? With that being said, how tall is the roof? Mm-hmm. Because he can't be working out and trying post moves and doing all these different things when the roof is really low, knowing as a guy who is taller right. and having roofs that are small, when you try to go up to pump fake and make a move, you hit the wall, you hit the ball against the wall. So there's a lot of interesting places that we can go with Jimmy Butler. Have we thought of this for a second? Maybe there was two balls and he was doing the double dribble move, right? Where you've got left and right and you're really trying to dribble and like one is harder, one is softer just to control your left and right hand. That could be a disturbance.
That is. What about that one dribble game, like where you like do that thing? It's like, is it like the spider thing, Tony? Where you keep the ball dribbling between your legs, but your arms are going like from front of you to back of you.
Yeah, that's the spider.
I don't know what that thing's called.
I used to always
see 9-year-olds do that.
I always used to think I could do that, and I would like really try, but I was never good at it. I feel like Tony, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's again, like as you said, they teach you that at Tamiami in 9 years old. And then once you're done with it, you're like, you know what? This doesn't really actually help me, so I'm not going to do it anymore.
Did you guys see, before we get to biking, Dak Prescott's brother tweeting on his behalf, kind of just like blasting the Cowboys? And my question, you guys, seems like you guys haven't seen this. He basically just tweeted saying, I've never really been a fan of the Cowboys. Looks like we're not going to be around here much longer. And there's no way he's tweeting that without Dak knowing, right? Like, I'm putting myself in that spot. If my brother's tweeting that, like, I know he's tweeting that, right? Like, there's no way he's just going rogue, right?
If Dak doesn't make him take it down, then that, I think, is basically it. Right? Like, I could see his brother doing that just based on conversations, and he knows, hey, Dak's out of here, whatever, it's not going to hurt. But when Dak sees it and doesn't say, hey, bro, take that down, then you know he's basically speaking for it.
Isn't there something like plausible deniability that Dak can say, I have no idea, he's his own man, he tweets stuff, and I have nothing to do with it? And I think there's a separation there, like a 1 degree of separation that you can always say, I had no idea, what are you talking about? I didn't even see that tweet. I don't even follow my brother.
Yeah,
franchise tag number?
Is it 35.
30? Oh, man.
Roughly. Over 2 years.
Man, people just see that number and they can't.
70 million over 2 years. Yeah. That's why I'm confused by the tweet, right? He's not going to be here much longer. Are we talking 2 years longer that he's not going to be here? Or you're saying that he's not going to play this season for $35 million? Because like, that's where, when that money comes up and you sign the franchise tender this year and next year, you're talking about $70 million over 2 years. That's a lot of money.
Do you guys feel like when you talk about contracts or any sort of transactions right now, you feel like you're a little crazy, right? It's like, I listen and I watch the shows, you know, the shows that I'm not on, like let's say Around the Horn, I'm listening yesterday and it's, you know, Pablo and Jackie and Clinton. It's like 90% of that stuff is like virus talk. And I'm like, they did not teach this in J school, man, like in journalism school. Like, I did not expect to be discussing, you know, America's social issues and this pandemic and all this other stuff. And Elena Deladon's like 69 pills that she takes. And it's just like, good God, I've never wanted to speak transactions more. But then when I talk about them, I'm just like, what are we talking about really? Like, if I really going to talk about, oh, Dak Prescott, 35 million, that sucks for him. Oh, 100,000 people are dead. Like, what are we doing? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to like lay that on you, but it's like, it's sort of driving me crazy right now.
I mean, it's true. We're in such a weird space now where if we want sports to come back so bad, but then does it take away from the message that we've been able to speak about for the last 6 months? Like, I don't know if the give and take is one that you could say, okay, yeah, like, let's just start talking about the Yankees and the Washington Nationals, you know, first pitch on July 24th or whatever. It's like, I don't know if it's hollow now because of this Pandora's box being open. But it does seem a little frivolous to talk about contracts and who's, you know, on the roster bubble.
Like Ed Orgeron saying America needs football. Like, if I'm watching a football game tomorrow, in my mind, I'm thinking, which one of those guys has corona? Like, is he, that guy gave it to that guy? Like, do you think a week from now this team's still going to be playing? Like, I'm not watching the football game thinking, oh, it's just football. Like, when I watch the soccer matches overseas, I can focus on the game because, you know, the reports are they've got that under control. Here, I mean, I cannot imagine a situation where I'm watching a college football game without fans and with those unpaid players and just enjoying the game. Like, that's not going to be relaxing for me.
Izzy, do you think that the NFL would consider flag football season before punting on the season completely?
Oh, God.
Did you take on the initiative to tweet everybody after the show? Because I saw the tweets before I listened to the show, and then I was just, what is Chris doing here? This is great. But then it felt like you just took on that initiative yourself to sort of cover your ass and waiting for that one yes.
All I need is one yes, Izzy. You want to give it to me?
I mean,
if you read the fine print of my tweets, I'm not saying it's going to be implemented. I'm saying they're like, do you think it will be discussed in an NFL meeting? Somebody, some like low intern just be like, hey, we could do this. No bad ideas.
I've been watching.
Wait, hold on a second. Whoa. That is not at all how it was presented. Now you're just saying some random intern will suggest it in a building.
No, that's how I heard it. That's how I heard it. He said there are no bad ideas in these meetings. So there will be a meeting and somebody will say, should we play flag football? That's how I heard it.
Billy, don't get me wrong. I want it to happen. Like, don't get me wrong, Billy. I want it to happen.
I don't think there are any interns that are sitting around in these big NFL come back to football meetings. Like, there's no intern that's sitting with Goodell and Goodell's like, all right, guys, spitball session. Any interns have any ideas? Flag football? Yeah. You know what? Let's put it up for a vote.
I mean, you don't think if that idea is pitched, Goodell says, give me the numbers and statistics on the difference between like how safe that would be with corona. Like, if you can prove to me that that would be safer.
Oh, it would be very safe for the offensive and defensive linemen because they'd just be sitting on the sidelines not playing because there is no spot for them in flag football.
Exactly. There is a spot for one center, though. But you can obviously root him as a tight end, Izzy. And then, you know, tight ends would be in there and you can have an extra one. That's not the point.
I see it. I see the juices flowing with all of you. You like it. You think it's
the point is this, Chris. It's very simple. You're talking about the business model that the NFL has been able to produce over how many years now? How many years has the NFL been around?
A lot. 7.
Okay.
101, dude.
Yes. Thank you, Roy.
Close.
Over 100 years, their platform and their business model has been tackle football. How many times have we heard the call to make football safer by playing flag football? Why would the NFL placate to those people to throw away their own business model for one season?
Because we're in a pandemic and they need to get these advertising dollars in somehow. And if they can put some product on a field that is a flag football game that the people, maybe the optics, it just appears a little safer as opposed to just punting on the entire season. My only point is that if you put two options on the table for Roger Goodell, completely scrap the entire NFL season or let's maybe play flag football, I think he's going to go to that option before he goes to just, you know what? No, I don't even want to think about flag football. Punt on it.
How do you think flag football works, Chris?
I don't know.
Do you think like people's faces are down by the flag?
That's what I don't understand how he thinks it's any safer. All you're doing is removing tackling, and tackling's not what's spreading corona.
They'll still have a virus. They just won't be concussed.
Right.
Is that the trade-off?
You guys are dissecting this too much, okay? I say things. I thought it like it's just like it's a funny visual. Aaron Rodgers wearing a flag and like saying hike. And, you know, Jimmy Graham being the center and then hiking it and going out for a pass, you know?
If Aaron Rodgers wore his towel the way he normally does and played flag football, that flag, I mean, that towel would be considered a flag. You could just pull it.
And also, Chris, they're still spreading germs just by touching the flag.
Roy, I'm not saying it's going to be completely safe.
Football.
We're playing basketball. Yeah. I feel like flag football and basketball are equal on the contact level. It's less contact than tackle football. That's all my point is.
But contact's not spreading corona.
Okay. I'm just
These are unprecedented times, guys.
I'm just spitballing. That is my crutch. Whenever I say something stupid, I like to crutch it with I'm just saying wacky things for the radio. And I'm just spitballing
ideas. High-level meetings. There are no bad ideas.
Thank you, Izzy. I feel like if I can't get Izzy, Izzy's like the king of flag football. Like, if I can't get Izzy on my side with this, I don't think I'm going to get anybody.
Before we get to the break, I did want to ask you guys something. As you guys are watching TV, and obviously we're doing it at an unprecedented rate, do you find yourself being like, this person's too close in this movie to the other person? We have coronavirus. Do they not understand that? Ooh. I've been watching shows, movies, videos of past times, and I start freaking out because I'm like, this is not socially distanced. Why are there all so many people in this bar? I think our brains are messed up, guys. Like, for the rest of time, we're not going to see straight anymore.
We'll be back after this. And we're back. Tony, that is a great point. I've been thinking about that so much. I've also been saying there's a lot of sports moments that we've had that we're never going to have anymore. Lance Stephenson blowing LeBron's ear. That's never happening again. You know, there's a bunch of like, you know, cool moments we've had in sports that are just not going to happen again. Right, Billy?
No, they'll happen again. Just not in like the next year or so.
I mean, right. You hope so. That's what you're hoping. That's best case scenario.
I told you guys about this before, right? My buddy trainer, his name's Tony, but his name's Tony Anthony. Like that's his name. His first name's Tony. His middle name's Anthony. And he's the second. He's Tony Anthony. So he's Tony Jr. And I'm always like, never can remember which I should call you, Anthony, whether it's Anthony or Tony, because he doesn't get called Anthony. My Anthony doesn't like to get called Tony, so I just throw them both at you and see what takes.
Another Tony. Would it be Tony?
Yeah, that's basically what it is. I don't know. It's whatever anybody wants to say at the time. I go by many different names, and it doesn't really affect me. I know my dad and my grandpa are both Tony. So I've never been called Tony until I got here. And then everybody started calling me Tony. And it's almost like a rite of passage. When you get older, Anthony's become Tony's. And I guess now I'm getting out of my cocoon and becoming a Tony, which is exciting.
That was Tony.
Exactly. And that's a good catchphrase.
So we're talking about bike riding, right? Who brought it up yesterday?
Well, we were talking about the most dangerous thing we've ever done. And we were like, and I was saying how I'm kind of a, you know, a coward with almost any kind of crazy activity. I don't want to go skydiving. I don't want to go.
You guys have never been. Nobody's been skydiving.
I'd like to. I haven't had the opportunity.
No, it's the best. It is great. See, that's what I never told you my skydiving experience.
I don't know. Have you? Tell us.
Well, I mean, it's not that crazy for anybody who's been, but I think the one part. So you know, you get on. I got it for. I guess it was a birthday gift or a Christmas gift. 1 year, and it was up in West Palm Beach, and like, so you're on this like rickety plane, and it's just you, the guy, your tandem rider, and the pilot. And you know, once you're up there, you know, it's all shaky, whatever. Once you're up there, you're like, all right, cool, this is gonna be fine. He tells me the instructions. He's like, all right, so when we get to the door, we're gonna sit at the door when it's open. And just that thought right there is crazy. Could you imagine like sitting in an open airplane door, just, you know, looking
dangling.
And so he's like, so when we get there, I'm going to count 1, 2, 3. And then when you jump, you put your arms out and your chest out. So, you know, the air can sort of catch you and you float that way. Right. And he goes, if you can't hear me, don't worry. I'm just going to tap you in the back of the neck and pretty much push you out. And I was like, okay, I'm not worried then. And so we get there and it's just like, everything's cool, right? And I think this is the part that most people don't probably think about when they think, you know, the scary part is falling through the sky. And to me, that wasn't it, because the falling part, like, you know, nothing, the air is not going to hurt you when you're out there, right? You're falling, it's all good. But sitting on the edge of that plane, and you've got this guy on your back, and you're just like trying to remember all the instructions. You're just saying, you know, that feeling when you're on the top of a roller coaster, like it's imagine that times 1,000, and you have control over this. You could totally bail and drop back in the plane. And so that's the part where it's just like, it's completely nerve wracking and you're about to, you know, poop yourself.
Thought of the chute not opening.
Ooh, what's that? Well,
the chute doesn't open. That's bad.
So we get to this thing, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, whew, that is the world underneath me. And I hear nothing but, like, just the plane. And so, obviously, I didn't hear his 1, 2, 3. So the next thing I know is somebody just pushing me in the back, and I'm leaving, and I'm out of the plane. And I forget right after that, because in my head, it's like, holy shit, I'm going to die. And then it's like, oh, that's right. He told me he was going to push me. And then by then, it's like 2 seconds in, and I forgot to do the, like, chest out, arms up thing. And so it's like, oh, crap. And then I did that. And then you're just kind of, like, floating. And it's like, well, this is pretty damn cool. And then, you know, he, like, tells you to look. He's holding a camera over here. It tells you to look in the camera, does some different things. And then, you know, next thing you know it, he pulls a chute. And then you're floating. And he kind of lets, my guy kind of let me steer a little bit, do a couple tricks. And then, you just got to remember the landing thing so you don't, like, break your legs or anything. But that's pretty easy. And I used to have a DVD of the experience, but I lost it somewhere. The only thing I remember from it is just the skin on your face just flapping like crazy. And it looks pretty disgusting. But it's, you guys got to do that. You got to do, like, a big, like, trip and just go skydiving.
Zero interest. But how awkward is the being connected to somebody? Are you connected with him, like, from the moment you get on the plane?
Yeah, he's like a heavy backpack. He basically...
I'm just imagining awkwardly walking with someone, like you're connected to somebody.
You're not connected. When you're on the plane, when you sit at the door...
No, I'm saying, like, the whole plane ride. Like, I'd rather just attach to him, like, right before we go. Like, do I need to, like, awkwardly, like, the whole time we're on a plane, like, okay, we're ready to go.
You're not actually attached to him until you sit with that door open. He sits behind you, attaches you and everything.
Oh, okay.
And then you go.
I would just
have him sitting on your lap, or him, or you sitting on his lap.
I have them walking from, like, boarding the plane, like, connected already, and it's just like an awkward experience. But I would just be so freaking out the entire time that some strap wasn't tight enough. Like, I'd just be like, my backpack, I would be like, it's not on tight enough. That's me on roller coasters. Is that you? Like, I'm always checking my, like, thing on the roller coaster. I'm always trying to tighten it. You guys do this move where you, like, you try to suck in just so you can, like, I want to hear that last clink where it's, like, really tight on me. I don't like it.
You know what? I have this weird thing on roller coasters is, like, I'll, like, duck my head down as low as possible because I feel like my head's going to hit everything. And so, like, if you ever see a picture of me, I'm like this. And I can have my hands up in the air, but for some reason my head has to stay connected to my shoulders like a turtle.
You'd have a really bad time with me, Chris, on roller coasters. I love roller coasters. And the one thing I do to whoever sitting next to me, usually my wife,
you say, oh crap, that's loose or something.
I'm like, oh my God, this isn't tight enough. This isn't tight enough as we're driving off, even though I know it's tight enough and the guy checked it.
So my Anthony, went skydiving one time. He's been a couple of times, I think. And he told his instructor one time, I think I have this story right, to do something cool, you know? And so the instructor was like, okay. And so basically, as they were jumping and he was about to pull, I think this is right, he was about to pull the chute, he was pretending like it wasn't working. And he's like, oh shit. Oh, and then, like, Anthony freaked the hell out. And then he finally pulled it and he's like, oh, you said to do something cool.
The worst. Gotta be expecting that one.
That's the worst. Tony, you just made me think of Anthony. Now I feel bad for calling you Tony. You just got me thinking of the worst is the person. The person checking you at a roller coaster when they walk by. Oh God. When they walk by and they're, like, barely touching it. They just walk by and it's like, no, you didn't check it. I want you to, like, really pull to make sure I'm good here. Anyways, you guys talk my dog back after this. We're going to get to Izzy riding a bike after my dog starts biking.
I didn't even know he had a dog.
I know. Where is he? He's not even at his house.
I'm at my parents' house.
Oh,
what's the dog's name?
Riley, after Pat Riley. Legitimately.
Can I just say, I think Riley is, and this is, I think this goes back to Sedano maybe. I think Riley's an overused dog name. I'm sorry about that.
It is.
I feel like I know somebody who just got a new puppy and they named it Riley and it's a girl. And I'm just like, oh, even if it's a girl, I don't love it.
Can you cover someone without bias if you've named your dog after them?
Oh, no. That's absolute bias. I mean, but come on. I mean, Sedano's not even going to hide this. Like, you see his tweets. Like, come on. He represents. It is what it is.
Wait, what's Sedano? Sedano's a dog named after someone?
I just said he had a dog named Riley.
Are you not listening?
I mean, the internet's in and out today. I tried to do my wire thing, and that's not working, so I have to keep going to Wi-Fi.
All right, so where we started is the scariest thing Chris has ever done was ride a bicycle in the street, which is, I mean, such a wuss situation.
I basically just said that I want to be an extensive, like, I would love to be the guy, because, like, when I saw results for Shredding for the Wedding, I was biking, and that's something I would like to get into as far as exercising. Like, if I could have, like, a daily thing, rather than running and walking, I'd like biking, but I don't like the risk that is involved with a lot of cars. I don't want to go through intersections. I don't want to be driving and seeing cars flying by me. So I want to, like, figure out how I can bike long distances without being around any cars. So yes, I'm terrified of biking. But what is the most dangerous thing you've ever done, and what is your take on biking?
Well, dangerous is, I mean, that just depends. Like, if you want to call skydiving dangerous, that would be it. Me personally, I'm not a big fan of the water. It's not that I don't do well in it. It just freaks me out. And I don't like being, like, I heard, was it you, Tony, did scuba?
Yeah, Billy and I have both been
scuba. I am not for scuba. I will not be down there for very long. I freak out, get claustrophobic. I think I'm not going to be able to breathe. But in terms of, like, danger, I don't think you have anything to worry about with the bike stuff. I did this, I think four times, I did this bike ride from Miami to Key West called the Smart Ride. And they split it up into 2 days. Like, the first day is about 100 miles, and the second day is like 64.
So not 6 miles.
It's not 6 miles.
not 6 miles. No. And so I got a road bike for it, obviously. And that's, you know, the one with the thin wheels and, man, the
seat. Can't trust those. You can't trust those.
You wore the outfit, didn't you?
Yeah, well,
you
did. Here's the thing about the outfit is when you've got the seat that's basically as thin as a pencil, right? Like, it's not going to be comfortable. You need cushioning down there. And so you got to get the bike shorts that, I mean, honestly, they look and feel like you're wearing a diaper, but it's way better if you're riding anything more than like 10 minutes because, like I said, it's uncomfortable. So, and especially if you're hitting like things on the road, if you're going through a long ride, like you got, and so if you've got the bike shorts with the diaper basically on the bikes on the backside, like, are you going to throw another pair of shorts over that? You can, but then you just feel like you're going skiing or something. You're wearing so many things. And if you're just wearing the bike shorts on the bottom, then, like, what do you need to do? Like, just, I don't wear like the spandex top. I'll just wear regular like shirt or whatever, but you got to do the shorts. Like, it, and like when you I did this ride, and the worst part about it is day two, because day one, you get your 100 miles in, you know, you're like exhausted, whatever. When you sit back on that seat in day two, holy Jesus. It takes about 20 minutes for it to stop being painful. Ooh. And then it's just numb. It's just numb. And so you have to wear that stuff. And yes, I do have the bike where you click in. They say it's like 25% like easier when you're clicking in. So that's good for distances. But Chris, my advice to you is two things. Is one, you want to get a speaker that you can hang on your handlebars, right? Because you don't want the headphones, you want to be able to at least hear the traffic a little bit. I usually just go one AirPod on the right side. Go over to A1A, anywhere on the beach, and just, I recommend where you live, I would just go north. Just head north on A1A. You'll have cars on your side, but you'll have great scenery. You'll have like really nice houses, some nice boats here and there, and then just come on back. And
I would be the guy riding on the sidewalk, even though I'm not supposed to. It's like, no,
Stretch where there's no sidewalk. Oh. It's just, it's just bike and cars.
If I see a sidewalk, though, I'm going on it, though, because it's much safer on the sidewalk. I don't care who I'm hitting, what pedestrians are walking. Like, I'd rather be on the sidewalk than in that stupid lane. I hate bike lanes. They're not big enough. See, that's why I don't go biking with cars, because I don't like those bike lanes. I get nervous. Anytime I'm driving by one, I'm always like, I got to go really wide.
Well, you got to wear a helmet, one. And two, so there's these lanes now where they say the bike can use, you ever see that? The bike can use the entire lane. I take full advantage of that. Like, I'm center lane. And if somebody ever honks at me, it's on. Like, I am trying to catch you. And then if I catch you, I am reading you the rights about how we share the road, damn it. and you cannot be honking at me just because I'm on a bicycle.
Give me an example of it being on, like a story of you doing that.
Well, the problem is I've never actually fully caught up to them, so it's a lot of hand gestures, and it's a good thing that I can ride with no hands, because it's just, you got the double, you got the, and then you got, and then you gotta like sort of make gestures to let them know what you're saying, like, hey, we share the road, it's together, get away from it, and you better not let me catch you. And then like I look around my bike, and I'm like, is there anything I can throw? And I have like a half empty water bottle, but like I hate that water bottle because I'm going on a bike ride. So, you know, it's you get some aggression out. I don't get road rage when I'm in my car anymore because, you know, I've sort of toned that down. When you're on a bike, like you said, Chris, you know your life's at stake, so you can get angry.
Road rage is like the one area that I do. I think I don't have anger issues at all, but like when somebody like is sitting at a red light, not turning right on that red, and I have to honk to let them know that they can do it. And then as soon as I just tap on my horn, it hits them. They're like, oh yeah, I can make a right on red. I like start losing it.
Well, the one that gets me is when they're like clearly have their head down and they're looking at their phone, and you give them a gentle, hey, hey, beep, beep. And they're like, ah, da, da, da. Yeah. It's like, everybody saw you, man. You were looking down at your phone. Just go. Don't get angry. Just go.
Izzy, thanks for joining us today.
Of course, guys.